mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, getting more from less. It's not just the theme for this week's Conservation, Tillage, and Technology Conference at Ohio Northern University. It's the philosophy farmers are living by these days. Also this morning, the Little People of America will hold their spring regional event in Findlay this weekend. We explain why that's such a big deal. And happening around town, it's time once again to go bowling for kids in support of the Children's Mentoring Connection. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, March 11th, 2025. How crazy is this? We know that the price of eggs has gone through the roof. It seems like that's the only thing anybody's talking about is the price of eggs. Price of eggs. How bad is it? Since October of last year, U.S. customs officers have made 3,768 seizures of bird and poultry-related products. 3,768 seizures at the border of bird and poultry related products. That is actually more than 10 times the number of seizures of fentanyl. Think about that for a second. More than 10 times more poultry products crossing the border illegally than fentanyl. There's been a 36% increase in people trying to bring eggs into the country illegally. However, bringing fresh eggs and raw chicken into the country is illegal because of disease concerns. It appears there are more eggs being smuggled into the U.S. from Canada right now than fentanyl, according to the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, Matthew Holmes. Anyway, that's why we're levying those tariffs against our neighbors to the north. Never mind fentanyl. We've got all these illegal, illicit eggs coming across the border. An employee of the No Frills grocery store in Niagara Falls says he has spotted Americans crossing the border for cheaper eggs. A dozen eggs there at the No Frills grocery store on the Canadian side of the falls, $3.73, while that same dozen goes for $4.95 or more just across the border. So you can see why this is a big deal, I guess. Wow. More eggs than drugs coming across. And it's not even close. Right now, that is crazy. Every day, there has to be some sort of doom and gloom story, right? In the news. Something that we are worried about, fearful of, concerned over. It's a we're all going to die, society is doomed story. Here is today's doom and gloom item. According to a new report, only 7 countries in the world met the World Health Organization air quality standards last year. Only 7 countries. Australia, New Zealand, the Bahamas, Barbados, Grenada, Estonia, and Iceland are the only ones that made the grade. Chad and Bangladesh were the world's most polluted countries in 2024, with average smog levels more than 15 times higher than the international guidelines, according to figures compiled by the Swiss air quality monitoring firm IQ Air. Now, I tried to look this up, and I didn't have time to dig into all of the data, so I don't know exactly where the United States stands on this. The World Health Organization recommends levels of no more than 5 micrograms per cubic meter of particulates in the air. And again, only 7 countries represent 17% of cities. Only 17% of all cities globally met the standard last year, and only 7 countries. I don't know where the United States or any of our cities stand in this list. But basically, only 17% at most, 17% of the population is breathing air that is up to the quality standards. So we're all going to die. So it really doesn't matter what the stock market is doing, because we're all going to die anyway. It doesn't matter the price of eggs. We're all going to die anyway. That is today's doom and gloom item. Definitely want to share that. This is interesting research. Speaking of scientific research, a Japanese study has found that maybe this should be our doom and gloom story, at least for men. A Japanese study has found that a lack of libido is linked to a higher death risk in men. A lack of libido. And this was no small study. It's an analysis of 20,000 people found that less frisky fellows were two-thirds more likely to pass away compared to more robust men. Shockingly, men who did not have sex at all were found to have a 72% higher chance of dying from cancer. Wow. Now, again, I don't know whether we're talking correlation or causation, but in this case, I'm not sure it really matters. I mean, why risk it, right? It may not be a cause, but why risk it? On the other hand, the research found that there was no link between a lower sex drive and higher mortality risk in women. Of course not. Japanese researchers actually gave this connection between libido and early mortality. They gave it a name. They call it Ikigai. Ikigai, I-K-I-G-A-I, Ikigai. That is the Japanese word for a reason to live. This is important research. This is only among the first things that you need to know this morning. Oh, my goodness. What else is going on? A little of other items here that are worth noting. New study from Arizona State University has found that dog owners frequently misinterpret how their pet feels. We just don't understand the signals, or we don't get it right, the signals that our dogs are trying to send us. Human beings, more likely, they say, to think their pet is happy due to something else going on around them. For example, if a dog is wagging their tail while happy music is playing, we may assume that the dog enjoys the music. But researcher Holly Molinaro says people don't look at what the dog is doing. Instead, they look at the situation surrounding the dog and base their emotional perception off of that. She suggests learning more about your dog's body language and behavioral cues instead of trying to use the environment for context. So maybe your dog is not happy for the same reason you think your dog is happy. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting. Let's see. And a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know. Speaking of a reason to live, pineapple as a pizza topping. It is almost as divisive a topic as politics or religion. And while it certainly seems to be one of those love it or hate it propositions, one Australian pizza chain is tackling the issue of pineapple on pizza head on. Bubba Pizza in Australia, I don't know where exactly in Australia this is, but it doesn't really matter, I guess. Bubba Pizza is urging its customers to break the pineapple divide and try orange instead. I'm not sure that that's any better. I really am not sure that that's any better. Their new ham and orange pizza features a tomato base, Bubba's original smoked leg ham, chunks of fresh orange, and mozzarella. Oof. I don't know. I mean, you think pineapple on pizza is... maybe that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make pineapple less controversial by coming up with something that's even more controversial, more divisive, more polarizing than pineapple. So pineapple doesn't seem so bad if you're talking orange. I don't know. And finally, among the first things that you need to know, lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, San Diego Comic-Con is going international. I saw this story on the Newswire, and I actually kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit because it says one of the biggest pop culture events in the world will hold an event in Spain this fall. It's the first outside of the U.S., first Comic-Con outside the U.S. Comic-Con Malaga will take place. Is that how you pronounce it? I don't know. But it'll take place September 25th through the 28th. Now, Comic-Con in San Diego, which is the big one, typically attracts thousands of fans and some of Hollywood's biggest stars. This summer's event in San Diego is taking place July 24th through the 27th. And I'm thinking to myself, is this really what we want to export to other countries? Is this really going to improve American standing in the world, exporting Comic-Con? And let's think about it for a second. Is that the best we have to offer other countries? I'm just saying. There you go. Some of the, you talk about, relations, international relations in this country being at, maybe their lowest level in quite some time. I'm not sure that this is going to improve matters much. There you go. That is the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Plenty of sunshine expected again today with a high in the middle 60s. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the mid-30s. After Republicans in the Ohio Senate passed their plan to overhaul Ohio's marijuana law, Republicans in the Ohio House have introduced their own version.
The new House bill keeps homegrown limits and tax rates the same, but lowers THC levels in extracts. It also shifts tax revenue to the state's general fund and limits hemp sales to licensed dispensaries. The Senate's version cuts home grow limits in half and bans public use. Both bills offer expungement for past marijuana offenses.
ONN's Danielle Wiggins reporting. Many Hancock County residents are utilizing the United Way of Hancock County's free tax preparation service. United Way says their dedicated volunteers completed more than 450 tax returns in just 1 month. The free service will continue at the Findlay Hancock County Public Library and 50 North through Tax Day, but appointments are filling fast. The program serves income-eligible individuals who live, work, or attend college in Hancock County and may not otherwise be able to afford to have their taxes prepared and filed. The United Way of Hancock County received a federal grant to allow for expansion of the program this tax season to help even more community members. Get more details in this story on our website. Blanchard Valley Health System has been recognized by healthcare supply chain leader Global Healthcare Exchange as a recipient of the 2024 Supply Chains of Distinction Award. BVHS says the award honors top performing hospitals and health systems in North America that have demonstrated exceptional commitment to supply chain excellence, innovation, and resilience. BVHS adding that healthcare, like many other fields, has faced supply chain challenges in recent years. And that's why they're working to be at the forefront of integrating automation and data-driven solutions into their supply chain operations. Get more on this recognition and this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Now, our cover story this morning, getting more from less. It is not just the theme for this week's Conservation, Tillage, and Technology Conference at Ohio Northern University. It's pretty much the philosophy that farmers are living by these days. Hancock County OSU Extension educator Ed Lentz is with us on the line this morning. And first of all, I want to mention the Conservation, Tillage, and Technology Conference. This is always a big, big deal. It is happening today and tomorrow at ONU. Explain what this conference is all about, why this is such a big deal. I mean, at one point in the not-too-distant past, things like no-till farming and cover crops, regenerative agriculture. These were all radical ideas. These days, They're kind of mainstream. So why is this still such a big deal at this conference?
Well, I think farmers are always looking for ways of trying to improve their business, trying to be more conservation-minded and also be economically profitable. And I think this conference tries to pull all that in. It is a local conference organized by Extension and NRCS, SWCD people. The speakers, some of them are local, but a lot of them are from across the country to bring in ideas in that. And I think also farmers want evidence that some of these practices are doing what they say they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get the farmer panels and get to see a lot of the different people that are trying it and sharing the results that they have. And so I think even though a no-till, I mean, they were talking no-till back when I was an undergraduate back in the late 70s.
Right.
So that there's been a lot of different perceptions of it. And I think right now everybody's just trying to say, what can I do to reduce my costs and increase my yields and be more profitable? And if the grain prices where they are, that's a real challenge for farmers this year.
Yeah, that was one of the things that really caught my eye with respect to this year's conference and the theme, getting more from less, because in the context of everything that will be talked about in the conference, margins getting squeezed, lower profits, hard choices have to be made for today's farmers.
Well, yes, and I think it's like any rest of us. We have a lot of income at one time. We may be buying some things that we don't really need, but they're kind of nice, or we want to try it. And the farmers in the same world, mm-hmm. When they're making a good profit, they'll be trying some new products and that maybe the research data is not there yet to say yay or nay with it. But when margins get tight, now they really want to know, is this going to work? Because I don't want to buy it if it's on a maybe. I want a high probability it's going to do what they say it does.
And kind of interesting, too, explain this for the benefit of those who aren't in the day-to-day business of agriculture. It seemed like this past year, especially, conditions were really favorable. It wasn't like the weather fought you every turn during the growing season this past year, and yet the margins were still very tight, and a lot of farmers are saying, our profit margins are really low right now.
Well, I think the biggest challenge, like everybody else, inflation's really had it's been a real challenge out there.
Mm-hmm.
The input cost, so I'm not getting as much for my grain now, but my input costs are still high. Maybe they're not as high as they were a few years ago, but there's compared to 2020, they haven't come back down. And that's inflation for you. So they're feeling that same thing when it comes to fertilizer, to fungicides, seed, all those things that they just have to buy up front here to hope to get a crop and get enough money from that crop back to cover their expenses.
Now, I thought it was kind of interesting. One of the speakers, and I'm sure this will be one that will be very popular among attendees, a lot of folks will be interested to hear, is the gentleman will be talking about, Fred Yoder will be talking about new leadership at the USDA with the new administration and the status of the farm bill or lack thereof.
Well, yes, and of course he's coming from an individual that's, used to be on the board or was your national corn growers, so they would have met with these national figures on a regular basis, lobbying for the corn producers, obviously, mm-hmm. Being with the Corn Association, and so yes, the farm bill, the lack of farm bill, has created what I want to call lack of stability, and of course, in other words, that's usually set up for a five-year program so people know what type of support they have. If they do have a really bad crop year, how much their insurance are going to have to be, what should they plant, what's government policy going to be. And as long as we're working off of, a 2017-2018 farm bill that's just going to be just rolled over. And, of course, things have really changed now since compared to that time period. And so it's really one of those, that inactivity of Congress to do something about that has put the whole industry on a holding pattern. Well, what do? We have to make investments for 9 months out hoping to get something, but we really don't know what the government's going to do, and they're a major factor on their profitability.
Yeah, and a lot of changes, even more than what you would expect over the course of those past several years. Obviously, with the new administration, there is a much different mindset, a much different approach to not just farm programs, but as it relates to agriculture, and you know, a much different approach to the USDA, and more broadly in that idea of getting more from less, more broadly in that theme. It seems like I would imagine every gathering, every meeting, every conference, this is, regardless of what the subject is, this is something that people are talking about. From, again, the lack of a farm bill, we've talked about that in the past, about how overdue that is, and now there are questions about funding for various farm programs, the impact of tariffs on the agriculture industry. There's an awful lot, even more uncertainty than just the lack of a farm bill.
Well, one of them that's up in the air right now is the conservation programs. We've had several good conservation programs out there to try to get a good balance between production and also to take care of our land. And that one right now is really in limbo, whether they're going to have any funds at all this year to even cover some of the things they've had in the past. And that's going to be a challenge there. Once again, it's all tied into the farm bill and funding. You know, at one time, there's even a concern, which we heard just not too long ago, is your FSA office. Are they going to be closing offices, downstaffing those individuals? They're the ones that manage all this, too. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. It's up in the air. And I think, you know, farmers are really resilient. And anybody in agriculture, we've had these upheavals. Nobody likes them. But it really makes it difficult to make a business management plan, and particularly when you've got to anticipate things like a crop we plant in April or May, and we don't see any results of that until October, that you've got to kind of figure out how we're going to cover things and where are we going to be in some ways in October.
And how frustrating is that, because there's so much in agriculture that is beyond the farmer's control. I mean, the activity on the commodities market, you can't really control. Certainly the weather, you can't control. But here we're adding uncertainty in things that we should be able to control. These are, you know, they say control the controllables. These are controllables, but we really don't know, you know, what is, they're not really being controlled right now, very well right now.
Well, in a lot of ways, it's our safety nets.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like I own a house, I have insurance, but are they going to pay if I have a disaster? Are my rates going to go up? Are they going to change on how much of that I have to pay on a premium? And, you know, just like us as a homeowner, that's very unsettling. I'm trying to budget here and trying to figure, have I got my home protected? If I do have a disaster, will I be able to survive after it? That's where all these government programs is supposed to take out or minimize that risk. Mm-hmm. And so we have a stable food producing area for our country to feed itself. So when you pull out that, well, we think we'll be there, maybe we'll be there, well, we're working on it.
Yeah.
That's not real comforting, and the farmers are definitely feeling that.
One of the things, and again, for the benefit of those who are not in the industry, and I'm sure you hear this quite a bit, people will say, well, why do we have all of these programs for farmers? We're just, you know, this is government welfare, you know, for farmers with all of these programs. But this is one of the reasons why the food supply that we have is so strong and the prices are so affordable.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of if we just look at it from a business aspect, why do you help one business over another one?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's actually stability. A country that cannot feed itself, cannot have a reliable food supply, is always at risk of revolution, a threat from another country, instability among their people. It's difficult to govern, difficult to work together.
Yeah.
And one of the things we've been blessed with in this country is, by government policy and things, is a stable food supply. I mean, we got the avian flu that's really hit the egg industry, and look how much everone's kind of, you know, here today we're smuggling eggs across the Canadian border.
Right, you were talking about that earlier. Yeah.
Yes, right. I mean, it's that's something that's out of all of our hands, the avian flu, but the ripple effect like the grain farmers in Mercer and Dark County, they're going to lose a lot of revenue because they sell grain locally there at a much better price because of that poultry industry. Well, it's not there because the food's wiped them out.
Right. And real quickly here on the topic of tariffs, there's been a lot said about the impact of tariffs. How concerned is the ag industry over the threat of significant tariffs in this trade war? Because, I mean, obviously agricultural products are going to be right at the center of all of that.
Well, it hits in two ways. Fertilizer, almost all of our fertilizer is imported. 90% of our potash comes from Canada. And so their input costs are going to go up. Now, that may be a little down the road before they fully affect it, because most of them already bought that, already have it for this coming year. But then the second one is their grain price. If all of a sudden, because of tariffs and retaliation, it makes our grain higher, we lose our export business. And I hate to say this, this is nothing new to farmers. They don't like it because it definitely affects their bottom line. But every time we have a change in administration, we have a change before. We had some pretty good long-term agreements with China where the last president basically eliminated them and nullified them because they didn't like it because the previous guy did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we're kind of running into that now. We're going to just change everything the previous guy did. And there's that kind of lack of stability because of just an executive order that could be thrown out.
Yeah. Again, getting more from less, not just the theme for this week's Conservation, Tillage, and Technology Conference, which is happening today and tomorrow at Ohio Northern University in Ada. Kind of the philosophy that farmers are living by these days. And Hancock County OSU Extension Educator Ed Lentz with us this morning. We appreciate you kind of putting it in perspective for all of us here this morning. Ed, thanks very much.
Well, my pleasure, and I hope they can attend the conference. Got some great speakers.
Coming up this weekend, you're going to notice a lot of little people around town. The Little People of America is holding their spring regional event in Findlay this weekend, and joining us to explain why this is a big deal are Patty and Jacob Klein. With the Little People of America, this is Region 5, right? This is the kind of the...
Correct. That's our, it's a five-state district.
Five-state district. So we're talking about Ohio, what, West Virginia?
Michigan, Kentucky, and Indiana.
Okay. So how many folks are expected for a gathering like this? This is not the first time, I guess, this has happened in Findlay, right?
Right. In 2019, we took on the task of doing this at the same hotel, the Hilton Garden Inn. We're really thankful to them. We went right back to them when we were asked to do this again because they were such a great host.
Mm-hmm.
We've registered close to 300.
Wow.
Not all are little people. Some are families that mm-hmm. have a little person in the family.
Right.
But we have close to 300 people attending.
And what are some of the things that will be discussed, some of the topics of the conference? Why is this, as we said, why is this such a big deal?
It's really just a big social gathering. LPA really is what brings people like me with dwarfism together. I mean, there's two different organizations between LPA and DAAA. LPA, like I said, is the social.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's just bringing people together. Not many times do you get to be able to see people like with short stature all at once. I mean, I have friends that I've known for a very long time that I've met through LPA, and like this is the time that I really get to see, hang out with them. I mean, it's only a weekend long, but we make that weekend last. So.
Mm-hmm. There are a number of kind of interesting topics that will be discussed beyond just the social gatherings with respect to medical care medical issues and that kind of thing. For those who are not touched by this, who don't have a firsthand knowledge, explain why this is such a that's such an important part.
I mean, it's really big just because a lot of people the traveling to see these kind of medical like doctors and physicians and mm-hmm. specialists, some families don't have the opportunity to do that. So for us to be able to have different doctors and medical advisors to come and willingly participate and like help these other people with that need the medical attention is really a great thing. I mean, Dan Horschmeyer, who's one of the doctors that's coming, he was a really big help in my life because I've had major back surgery, and he's been a big supporter of LPA. And having him even just come all the way from University of Missouri Children's Hospital, coming all the way to Findlay, is just an awesome thing for us.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I wanted to ask. What are some of the medical issues? Kind of help us out to understand what some of the challenges are for individuals such as yourself.
There's a lot of medical
it varies from the type of dwarfism that individuals have. So he has achondroplasia, which you see mostly only orthopedic complications because of small spinal column and things like that. But so we're really fortunate through LPA. One of the things they do is they have an medical advisory board. Okay. And so only certain doctors that are specialists in this area do that. And we have doctors coming from Johns Hopkins who are specialists in genetics. And then we also have Dr. Horschmeyer, who's a dwarfism specialist in orthopedics.
Because I think for, again, for most people who don't have exposure to this, who don't know any better, may not realize that it's about more than just, you know, here's a regular person who's just smaller. I mean,
exactly what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But there are medical complications that go along with that quite often. And then, as you mentioned, there's fun and games as well. It says you've got a skills and scrimmage sports clinic. So,
I'm kind of the sports clinic. What I'm doing is kind of based off DAAA. So DAAA is North Athletic Association of America. They host all kind of sporting events with LPA, with the conferences, and what I'm doing based off of there is really for the sports clinic is just helping grow the sport and helping people compete in sports that have dwarfism, because a person like me, I've grown up with sports, played sports all throughout my life, and I just never really had the chance to compete with everyone else because everyone was bigger than me. With DAAA, we have the chance to compete with people like us, and that's what I want to do with this sports clinic of hosting a basketball sports clinic, to where the first beginning part will be with people that don't necessarily understand or haven't really played basketball, to where they can learn the skills, shooting, defending, and then the other half of that clinic is just competing and playing the fun sports of basketball. So, yeah.
Yeah. Again, the main purpose here, and you know, with the sports clinic, you've got a lot of other social activities. That's socialization, you mentioned, and meeting up, and but also, I would imagine a big part of this, and Patty, maybe you can speak to this, is the the socialization among families as well, family members as well.
Right, it's a whole new world when, you know, the doctor comes in and says, Mr. and Mrs. Klein, your child has dwarfism, and you're like, what does that
what
mean?
Is that? Right.
What's going to happen here? Yeah. So the first few years of parenting a child with dwarfism have a lot of doctor appointments involved. Things sort of normalized when he was about 4 years old, and we didn't have constant appointments. But having access to doctors who are very, very familiar and have seen hundreds of, you know, cases of dwarfism is just so important. So there's a parent meeting that we do. Also navigating school. Do the kids need a 504 plan or an IEP plan? And that's very confusing to people, teachers who aren't familiar, because it's so rare.
Right.
They just, you know, we spent a lot of time when he was growing up educating the teachers, you know, that no, don't treat him like he's, you know, a little baby.
And
that's easy to do.
And again, expanding on that, one of the things that is really great about an event such as this is it also provides exposure to the community at large. I mean, because, you know, obviously, you know, you're bringing a lot of people into town.
I've been so excited about the community involvement. The chamber has been fantastic working to get this thing going. We have the University of Findlay students, the physical therapy department. They designed, Dr. Colbert at the university designed a whole program, a whole class around our thing, where their lab, the students' lab, is to volunteer at our event. So we have physical therapy volunteers that are interested in orthopedics, and it's just very exciting. Church of the Nazarene is hosting our sports clinic. It's just the community involvement has been a, we did things a little differently this time, and I reached out to them. Donations for raffle prizes. I couldn't believe how many businesses here in Findlay.
How important, again, Jacob, as a member of the Little People community, how important is that? I'm thinking to myself that when we think of individuals who are wheelchair bound or who have other challenges, maybe vision issues or hearing issues, we see those as more mainstream because they're much more common. But I would imagine, again, for those with dwarfism, you still get looks. People kind of stop and stare. It's a lot less common.
Mm-hmm. The biggest thing for that is just people don't understand. Like you said, like people with different accommodations, such as wheelchairs or walkers, it's more common to see that.
Right.
People are used to that. People are educated about that in schools and stuff. Whereas dwarfism, it isn't really looked upon in teachings and stuff. And having organizations like LPA and like even just having the outreach of being able to teach people that don't understand what dwarfism is, and people look at it and the staring and don't understand, the common thing of that I get is I was always like the little kids of, mommy, daddy, why is he so small?
And this kind of helps remove some of that.
Yes, 100%. I mean, this conference here, I mean, luckily I've had the pleasure of growing up here in Findlay, and people basically all the way around town already knowing who I am and stuff. Mm-hmm. But really having the people from all around, I mean, just getting more outlook to the community and stuff of
just understanding
that, right, like, hey, we're normal people. I mean, the only difference between me and you is our height. So I mean, it's awesome. Yeah.
The regional conference is happening Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. We go home on Sunday. It starts Friday night. There'll be bingo and karaoke and gathering and food. And then Saturday really starts the grind where we start that the medical clinic will be going on all day. Those doctors see people for free. Mm-hmm. And we're just so thankful for that, because one of the things I know as a parent is that we don't want doctors guessing about what we should do here. So it's really important, and as a parent, that other parents have that opportunity to see, the best of the best in dwarfism specialties.
Very cool. Spring regional event for the Little People of America happening in Findlay this weekend. We have a link on our webpage for more information. And again, Patty and Jacob Klein with us in the studio this morning. Tell us more about it. Guys, thanks very much for taking the time.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Boy, you think the trade war is bad. This is, something that is on a whole different level. A doctor in Florida, Giovanni Baula, has confessed to dumping gallons of urine on the front door of a competing medical practice. A little trade war of their own going on there, and it's getting ugly. Dr. Baula poured the material on the office of Dr. Dylan Dinesh, who bought Dr. Bula's practice back in 2022. He bought the other doctor's practice, and the other doctor is not happy. In recent months, the defendant became upset with the victim over the state of the business, according to police report. Upon the arrest of Dr. Baula, the doctor has agreed to pay $7,570 in restitution and complete a 12-month program. He does remain licensed to practice medicine, but I'm not sure that there will be a whole lot of folks real eager to avail themselves of his services. Now, that is a trade war right there. At least we're not dumping gallons of urine at the border of Canada, It could be worse, I guess. Let's see. What else going on in the broken news? Men in Aurora, Colorado is under arrest for a half a dozen armed robberies. And apparently he robbed the same store five times. Ross Wessner allegedly held up one particular gas station on South Tower Road in Aurora five times. He also robbed a 7-Eleven once. But apparently he liked the Shell gas station on South Tower Road more. Five times. He was finally taken into custody on March 4th. The number of charges has yet to be revealed by the Aurora PD. But I wonder, five times. You would think after the second or third time, it would have been fairly easy to catch him. You know, just wait there for him to come back. It took five times to rob the store before they were able to nab him. Seems like that should have been a much, much easier arrest than it turned out to be. Let's see here. The perpetrator of a shooting in Memphis, Tennessee, will not be charged. The perpetrator of the shooting will not be charged, and that's because the shooter is a pit bull named Oreo. Police were called to a home in Memphis around 4 a.m. Monday and found a man who had been sleeping in his bed had been shot, and it turned out the dog jumped up onto the bed, got his paw stuck in the trigger of the firearm, and ended up shooting his owner. Fortunately, the man was grazed in the left thigh by the bullet. He was treated and appears to have a non-life-threatening injury, but he's just grazed. That could have ended very differently. Oreo the pit bull will not be charged. Man, that's rough. That's rough when your dog shoots you. I mean, you know you're having a bad day when you get shot by your dog. It's going to be a bad day if that's the way you start your morning. A very unusual assault in Orange County, Florida, back to the Sunshine State. Apparently, according to news reports, a woman by the name of Shanika Serdal is accused of attacking a man at a 7-Eleven with a Pringles can. She an all-out assault with a Pringles can. The victim in the case suffered cuts around his eye from all of this. Ms. Serdal went off running, tried to escape, but was eventually tracked down by police. Police also recovered the weapon, the Pringles can, in her possession. She still had the Pringles can. She has been charged with aggravated battery. Can you imagine? You imagine going to jail? What are you in for? I assaulted a man with a Pringles can. Don't let me near any Pringles cans. That's gonna be dangerous. Let's see. From the international file, the broken news: a man in Peru is recovering after surviving. This is all kinds of crazy. Man in Peru is recovering after surviving being run over by a train. And there is video of this. I wouldn't have believed it if there wasn't video. Video obtained by the BBC. You can see the man lying on the tracks, on the railroad tracks, when the train hits him. Local official says the gentleman, whose name was not given in the report, gentleman was apparently in a state of intoxication, fell asleep along the train tracks, and did not see or feel the train coming. I mean, you got to be pretty out of it not to see or feel a train coming. The man was taken to the hospital, but was left with only minor injuries to his arm. Wow. That is, not everybody can say that they were run over by a train and live to tell about it. That is crazy. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a man in South Carolina is accused of impersonating a narcotics officer in order to rob a couple. Authorities in Anderson County say Dakota Aylwine robbed the victims at gunpoint behind a shopping center while claiming he was an officer with the county sheriff's narcotics team. Claiming to be an officer, the county sheriff. He was not. Spoiler alert, he was not an officer. He allegedly went to the couple's motel room later to look for more items to steal. He was eventually arrested and charged with impersonating a police officer and armed robbery. Because being arrested, what fun is it to be arrested for armed robbery when you can also add a charge of impersonating a police officer? There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Ever wonder what being a Findlay Rotarian is all about?
I'm Alyssa Preston, director of the Hancock County Convention and Visitors Bureau. I am proud to be a Findlay Rotarian because locally we make an impact by recognizing amazing educators in the Findlay and Hancock County area through the Golden Apple Award.
To become part of an organization that brings together business, professional leaders to provide community service and advance goodwill, contact Findlay Rotary at findlayrotary.org and click on Join.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. There's a lot going on in the world right now. It's enough to drive you to drink or to smoke or both. In a new YouGov survey, nearly 20,000 U.S. adults, they ask, which do you personally use more often? 27% said alcohol. 11% said marijuana. 4% said both equally, and 52% said neither. So we're 52%, a little more than half of us. We're not quite there yet, but the way we're going, we might get there eventually. They also ask, which do you personally enjoy using more? 27% said alcohol, 13% said marijuana, 5% said both equally, 48% said neither, and 4% preferred not to say. Not quite ready to own up to it yet. That may change. Check back with me in a couple of months. Happening around town, it is time once again to go bowling for kids in support of the Children's Mentoring Connection. And joining us from the Children's Mentoring Connection this morning, Stacy Shaw and Jenny Hammond are with us in the studio. Ladies, thank you both for taking the time. Certainly appreciate it. First of all, give us all of the details on Bowling for Kids.
So the who, what, when, and where. So it is going to be April 5th and
6th. Okay.
We will be at Sportsman's Lane again. And so you can pick your time that you want to bowl. There'll be three shifts each day at 11, 1, and 3. And so we have plenty of room yet for people to sign up. We do have our first shift at 11 on Saturday is full.
Okay.
So they are coming in, but we would love to be able to pack the lanes once again this year.
Absolutely. And how big of an event is this for what you do, Children's Mentoring Connection?
Yeah, so this is our signature event, and it is really important for us because we do not charge our families anything to enroll their kids and to be a part of it. And so it helps us to help our mentors in what they do. So we're able to then provide activities twice a month for them to come and do things together, and then other ways that we support our mentors as well as the different 8 schools that we work with.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that for those that don't know, and we've talked about it many times in the past, but just to sort of reiterate all of the ways that CMC works with the youth in the community.
So, yes. So like Stacy had said, we are, you know, in 8 schools in Hancock County, and then we also have our community program. Mm-hmm. And it's so important, you know, to get out there and be a volunteer in our community for our children. And this, like Stacy said, this event just really helps us, you know, get the funds and that we need to do what we do in our community with the youth.
How many, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but how many youth are we talking about that are involved with CMC?
Yeah, so through with the kids in the school program and our community program, we're around 150 to 175 children that we serve with each year with the different school districts as well. So,
yeah.
And we have about 40 matches in our community-based program, mm-hmm. and we usually run around 15 kids on our waiting list. So that's really important that we're always trying to, once those 15 kids roll out, there's always 15 more to come.
Right.
So we don't want to have more kids on our waiting list than we can serve in some capacity. So the way that we're able to serve those kids while they're waiting for a mentor is they can come to our group activities as well, which allows us us to get to know them a little bit better, but it also allows some of our incoming mentors to get to know the kids as well.
Very important, because obviously for all of the kids that you serve, and that's a lot of lives touched, for all of those individuals, the ideal is to have mentors for every single one of them.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know, there's no fun with, you know, for the children that are on the waiting, you know, list. But like Stacy said, we do have that, you know, twice a month activity that we provide. So at least, you know, they're able to come and, you know, we do things with them so they don't feel like they're just waiting and not having the opportunity to enjoy the things that we provide.
Yeah. What is involved in mentoring, in becoming a volunteer?
So the biggest thing that's involved is fun, because who wouldn't want to have fun? Every day that we hang out with the kids, they make me laugh. I'm looking forward to tonight. We're painting pottery and some things like that. But what it's all about really is, once you get approved from us, so what there obviously is a vetting process to that, because safety is most important for the kids.
Right.
But I think all of our mentors, even our high school age mentors, would say they get just as much out of it as our kids get out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's because they get to see our kids grow and develop and become great human beings out there. We have three of our kids who have been involved in our program probably since they were around the age of 8 that are graduating from high school this year. Mm. And all three are planning to go on to college and things like forensic science and other kinds of biochemist is the other one, and I'm not sure what the third one is doing. But so these are kids that really, you know, one of them, he's gone through Millstream's culinary programs.
Okay.
So it has been a blessing to watch them grow and develop over the years. And so a lot of that is in part to the relationship that they've had with their mentors.
Kind of interesting mention that even high school age kids that are involved with the younger kids as mentors get a lot out of this. And that's been something that in recent years there's been more of an effort, right, to get older kids / young adults involved.
Right, right. So some of the mentors, like our high school mentors or even, you know, early 20s, some of them have gone through the program and know the impact that it has. So then they come back and do the mentorship, and then it really helps them develop for a career and that type of thing in their future.
Talk about giving forward, paying it forward.
Yes.
So Bowling for Kids is, as you mentioned, the signature event. This is a big deal to help you do what you do. So how do folks sign up?
Yeah, so like I said, we would love to be able to pack the lanes this year. So if you go to cmchancock.org/events and you click on that link, it's going to take you right to our registration page. Mm-hmm. You can register a team up to 5 people and help us raise funds.
And you may be a group of individuals that you work with. It may be
neighbors,
a church group. But yeah, it could be neighbors, friends, family,
co-workers.
Really,
any
group of individuals are welcome. It doesn't have to be tied to a business or an organization.
Right. And that's really what's unique and fun about this event is it's for everyone. So everyone can find a place.
Yeah.
And everybody's creative through it. We'll have teams that will get their own team t-shirts or their own official bowling shirts that they come in. Some will go in all out. We have other ones that just dress up and pick a theme for each year. So it's really exciting, and we have many teams that come back year after year, and it's one thing that they look forward to doing.
April 5th and the 6th are the dates, and as we always say, it's not really about the bowling.
It is not. So we take bowlers. If you need a little assistance with the dinosaur or the gutter guards, we're happy to have you. But if you're a professional bowler, feel free to stop by. It'll be a lot of fun.
Sure. Right. A lot of prizes, a lot of fun.
Raffle baskets. Yeah, we'll have raffle baskets there and door prizes and maybe food a few other little fun things.
It's going to be a good time, and it's for a great cause. What is the goal this year?
The goal is to raise $100,000.
Okay. So we need a lot of folks to help out to make that happen. We've got a link on our webpage for more information. Bowling for Kids from the Children's Mentoring Connection coming up in a little less than a month. So now is the time to get registered for that. It's another one of those events that I love every year when it comes around, because it's another sure sign that spring is right around.
Absolutely.
All together now. Absolutely. Yes, yes. Again, Stacey Shaw, Jenny Hammond with the Children's Mentoring Connection. Thanks very much for dropping by. And that will finish up our podcast for today. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. We'd love it if you'd drop by for a visit. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, will there be a government shutdown at the end of the week? Could a repeal of the CHIPS Act threaten Intel's investment in Ohio's high-tech economy? Will Congress approve the elimination of the Department of Education? Representative Bob Latta will join us to discuss the overwhelming whirlwind of issues currently swirling around Washington. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.